United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Good day. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobert, and today my guest is Pastor Andrew Geib, who is the Associate Pastor at St. James Lutheran Church here in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you very much, Dr. Strobert. It's good to be with you.
Well, this is part of our annual top stories in religion for the previous year, and today we're going to talk about your top stories for 2019. And so I'm going to begin by asking you, what is the first top story for you as you remember 2019?
I think as a Lutheran pastor, the top story for me has to be the ELCA becoming the first country's first sanctuary church body. So the decisions that we made at our ELCA National Assembly this past year.
What do you mean by a sanctuary church body?
So the ELCA, I think it was kind of a surprise when this came to the floor at the National Assembly. Those in leadership were not quite expecting it, but as they formed their understanding of what it meant to become a sanctuary church body, it was things like walking with immigrants alongside of their journeys, praying, holding people in prayer, particularly those who are seeking asylum from countries that are dealing with some pretty tragic events. At times, congregations might decide to house illegal immigrants or undocumented immigrants, certainly offer resources if they're in need and those types of things.
Well, I as you said, it was a surprise to much of the leadership and to the laity when it came to the floor of the National Assembly. What do you think, it seems to me that people might have been confused by the term and thinking that the church was trying to advocate breaking the law.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that was definitely a misunderstanding. And I think also there was a misunderstanding just about the way that our church polity works. So there were folks within congregations who felt like this was really a top-down decision, but in reality it was a grassroots decision that came from congregations and from synods and then to the national level. And so the ELCA was not advocating for any breaking of laws. It was simply witnessing to the biblical scripture, talking about how we are to welcome the stranger, to love our neighbor, and to care for those people who are in need.
Well, certainly as we go into 2020, this might take more shape, and we might hear about more actions that congregations are taking to help those who are dislocated.
Right. Yeah. And I think our lead pastor, Pastor Michael Allwine, and I were surprised at how quickly this grabbed attention within our congregation.
And I want to ask you, what has been the effect on the leadership, you and Pastor Mike?
Yeah, so immediately after the decision was made, Pastor Mike and I sat and we spoke, and we tried to come up with a plan for how to talk with people about this, how to make people aware within the congregation. So that really we could get a hold of it before conversations would happen in a way that, you know, caused issues. And so we held a church congregation-wide forum in the worship space. We had representatives from our synod who were there to answer questions, as well as Pastor Mike and myself. And really what we found was that people heard the word sanctuary and automatically assumed the worst. Instead of reading the material that had come through to talk about really what this meant. And they felt as though, because of what the word sanctuary has become in our news and our political arena, that it was this illegal activity, which of course it wasn't.
Right.
They felt as though also that the ELCA was telling churches things that they had to do, instead of leaving it up to the congregations to decide what best worked for them.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
You have another top story in the religion for 2019. Could you share that?
Yeah, so the next big one that kind of struck my attention was the United Methodist Church's decision at their National Assembly to vote on gay clergy and same-sex marriages.
Okay. Could you share with our listening audience what that has meant or what that will mean for that denomination?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're still unsure of exactly what it'll mean for the Methodist denomination. Unlike the ELCA, which is a church that's within the United States, the Methodist Church goes globally. And so I think what we saw at their National Assembly, at least from what I have read in the news and understood, is that many of the Methodists across the United States were in support of gay clergy and for gay marriages. And then when it went to vote on the global level, things very quickly changed. And so the vote that was actually taken was to go against those two things. And now the Methodist Church is left with the decision, what to do. Do they split? Do they stay together? How is all this going to work out?
Yeah. How might they be united within the diversity of opinions? And right. That's always a difficult one for the denominations or for the local congregation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the ELCA, as you know, went through a similar decision to this back in 2009. And my dad, who's also a Lutheran pastor, was actually a voting member at that assembly. And when he came back from that, he was just exhausted. I mean,
sure.
From the emotional distress on both sides. It's, you know, the traditional side believes that Scripture tells us that same-gender relationships are wrong, right? We know a little bit more today within the ELCA through our own study of what that means and looking at context with those Scriptures. But now the Methodist Church is kind of left to decide this. And regardless of which end their people fall on with this decision, you know that there's going to be hurt feelings.
Right, exactly. And it also affects our relationship as an ELCA denomination in terms of our relationship with the Methodist Church.
Right.
So there's a lot that needs to be discussed and studied in the next few months and years.
Right. Yeah. It's not easy.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Our prayers are with them as they are involved in this decision. I'm going to go push you to the next top story.
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the things that we've seen that's taken place within the last couple years, not just in the United States, but really globally as well, has been a rise in anti-Semitism. And so that would be the next news topic for religion that kind of struck my interest.
Yeah, indeed. And in some ways, it's shocking to think that we have this attitude, and particularly when we think about the number of people and groups that have studied the Holocaust and what the Jewish population went through during that period, to see that it has resurfaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, and I guess we might have more violence rather than less violence.
Yeah, and that's what the news reports are kind of saying. You know, so this article that I have in front of me from Time magazine is just one of many that has dealt with this. You know, and going back to late 2018's anti-Semitic act in Pittsburgh that took place.
That's right.
At the Tree of Life Synagogue, which left 11 worshipers dead. There's just been a surge in this violence ever since then, globally as well. So, and here in this report, they include numbers from cases of anti-Semitic violence, including the U.S. with over 100 cases, the United Kingdom with 68 cases, France and Germany with 35 cases each. So, and in Germany, a 70% increase in violent anti-Semitic events that have taken place. So,
And I wonder, and as I hear these reports, I wonder what has caused this resurgence?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you wonder if it really has anything to do with religious beliefs or maybe a lack of them. I don't, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Again, 2020, we'll continue to examine and read
right.
what is taking place or what measures are being taken to reduce
yeah.
the acts of violence
right.
against our Jewish brothers and sisters. Okay, our next story, top story in religion.
Yeah, and so this was an interesting one, and for me, really why I found this one interesting, it's titled Trump Should Be Removed from Office. And I think the reason that I found it interesting wasn't necessarily about the title itself, but the publication that it came from. And so this article came out in Christianity Today, which is known as being a much more conservative, evangelical Christian publication. And so for them to write an article on how Trump should be removed from office was shocking to me.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Because that hit the news.
Right.
Yeah. Because it is known, as you said, as a conservative evangelical magazine. And what did the article explain or describe what it meant, what it was trying to say to its readership?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, it, you know, as you work your way through the article, they struggle with it, obviously. And it's clear that they're trying to wrestle with the realities around Trump's presidency. And so they've acknowledged the fact that people who have opposed Trump have really done everything in their power to work against him, and how initially they tried to support Trump through that time period. But then particularly through the recent stuff that's been going on with Trump and the impeachment hearings, they feel as though his true character has come out. And as any faithful Christian, regardless of denomination, that's a difficult character to support. And so the author of the article writes to the evangelicals who continue to support Trump. And they say this, they say, remember who you are and whom you serve. Consider how your justification of Mr. Trump influences your witness to your Lord and Savior. And, you know, I think that this is the struggle that we all have.
Right.
Who do we serve? You know,
exactly. And it goes to show that religion is not, and our faith is not divorced from living our daily lives,
yeah.
And which includes economics, politics, etc.
Right.
We cannot separate.
Yeah. I mean, I have found myself saying again and again to people within the parish that our faith should guide everything else. You know, our
exactly.
politics should not influence our faith, but our faith should influence our politics and everything.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what follow-up editorials from this magazine will come to surface and come to the public.
You bet. Yeah.
Our next, or your next, top story in religion.
Yeah, so the next one, there were several articles that I found that dealt with the debate over the role of women within the church. And, you know, my mom is a Lutheran pastor as well. And so from the time I was little, I was able to see her role in the church and use that as a model for my own as well, too. So this was an interesting topic for me.
Right, particularly, I guess, you know, being born into a clergy couple household,
right.
You know, that you're used to seeing a woman in leadership,
right?
Besides being your mother,
right.
But it also says that that the struggle continues,
right.
For women in our various churches, and even in churches that have women clergy,
right? Yeah, absolutely. So this article in front of me right now kind of focuses on how the evangelical Christian world and the Baptist church are struggling with this issue right now. But you're exactly right. I mean, the ELCA has had women in ministry for several years and certainly has had
50.
Them a part of their seminaries and professors and all that kind of stuff. But without question, it still is an issue even within the Lutheran church.
Exactly, because women, they might get the first call, but it's more difficult to get a second call or to have leadership or be the lead pastor in large congregations.
Right. Yeah, and I think we've made major headway, you know, with Bishop Eaton being elected.
Exactly.
You know, and then even within the last couple of years, we've had several synodical bishops, women synodical bishops elected too. And so I think that says that we're heading in the right direction and we have a strong female voice, but there still is a lot of work to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think we have not seen the last of that subject.
No.
as we head into 2020.
No, not at all.
Right. And you have another top story.
Yes. And as a parish pastor, this one is one of particular interest for me, certainly, but also not one that's void of anxieties. So the one in front of me now is one that's been filling news reports that deal with Christianity and religion, and it's the overstated collapse of American Christianity.
Wow.
Yeah, so this, the decline of the church. You know, what's the future? Where are we heading?
How do you sense that from your day-to-day involvement in the congregation? Do you sense people talking about this or reflecting on this?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, and I think as pastors, we can focus on it too much. I know that I can focus on it too much, and I need to kind of be aware of that. It feels as though we can't sit down with bishops and other church leaders without hearing about church decline. And certainly we're seeing the effects of it all over the United States. St. James, I feel, has been in a good position. Our council president just shared with us at last month's council meeting that we have actually had a 10% increase in worship attendance over the last 4 years. So that's
good to hear.
Good to hear. Yeah, and exciting for us. But we can't ignore the fact that this church decline is happening all around us.
Exactly. And I think I remember, if I remember correctly, you quoting in one of your sermons, you know, that I forget the percentage of churches that did not have any baptisms.
Right.
In the past few years, and yeah. And that to me is startling.
Right.
As the church continues through baptism and the incorporation of new members.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see whether we see a turnaround nationally.
Right. Yeah, and I think you hope that when people are in the midst of times of hopelessness and they're struggling with things, that they can turn to the church and that that need becomes revamped for people.
Right.
But the work really is on us. I mean, the Spirit guides and leads us to share the gospel, but we have to be open to that and willing to do it.
Right. And to be in an environment or in communities that invite people to come.
Right.
To come.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that we'll have a generation of people who are not nurtured in the faith.
Right. Yeah, so it used to be, the concern used to be, how do we keep people in church following confirmation?
Right, exactly.
But now we're dealing with a general population of people who don't even know the basic story of Jesus.
That's right, you know? Exactly.
So it's a whole new challenge.
Yeah, a challenge for all of us,
right.
You know, leadership and participants.
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Another top story for you, or for us?
Yes. Yeah. So then the next big one that really struck my attention was the fire at Notre Dame.
And, oh, yes.
And I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts and emotions and feelings on this one.
Yeah, I think I share. I was worshiping there just 2 weeks before the fire occurred.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe that such a monument, not only for Christianity or for France itself, you know, but the hundreds of years that it existed.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's one of those stories for me that reaches, like you said, far beyond the church. I mean,
right.
Into the secular lives of people, you know.
Exactly.
So for the people who lived there, you know, and continue to live around the cathedral, it's something now missing, right? You know.
Exactly, and just recently, at the end of the year, come Christmas, we just celebrated the Christmas season, and there was no liturgy at Notre Dame. You know, they were at a nearby church, but it was not Notre Dame, and that shocked me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I had read actually in the article that I have in front of me that deals with this. That's one of the things that they talk about. The sadness and disappointment that has come with this.
Yeah, and it also says something about our monuments or church monuments that, yes, they are there and for those of us who worship and are practicing Christians, but they also have meaning beyond.
Right.
Beyond the denomination or beyond our faith, but people look at these icons,
yeah.
You know, for various reasons.
Yeah.
Various reasons.
Yeah. So I mean, even when we're talking about the decline of church, one of the big conversations that comes into it is the church plant itself, the physical body of the church.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, one of the things that I kept hearing in these reports about Notre Dame was that this was something that goes far beyond religion, that it's people's lives stories, right? They have memories of this place and experiences of this place. And so you hope that through the ashes will come new life too.
Indeed, yeah. I'm sure we'll be hearing reports about its restoration, because that's been a controversial topic over in France these days.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Moving right along.
So the next one that I have is one actually that I was not aware of until just a couple of days ago. And that was that the Mormon Church is pulling over 400,000 youth out of the Boy Scouts.
And what is the reason for that move?
From what I'm reading right now, a lot of it has to do with child abuse cases.
Okay.
That the church has heard of these reports, you know, within the Boy Scouts of America, and that they are pulling their kids out because of that. And I guess in the process of beginning their own organization that will be similar to the Boy Scouts of America, but have maybe a more specific religious spin on it.
Wow, that's, I mean, and the because the Boy Scouts is a very huge, I mean, international organization.
Right, yeah. And I think that they have seen a sense of decline over the last, whatever, 5-10 years. They've tried to do some things to kind of, to grow again. I just read in this article that they've added over 150,000 girls since they've accepted girls into the Boy Scout program, and that has helped some. St. James, downtown Gettysburg, has the oldest Boy Scout, Cub Scout group in the area. So certainly,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and they're a part of our worship every year. We're already planning that event for a couple months from now. And so this will affect us, certainly.
Exactly.
The woman at our church who's kind of the head of our Boy Scout, Cub Scout groups, reflected to our lead pastor that she believes this will be the end of the Boy Scouts of America.
And that's sad to hear, because because so many of these young boys become leaders, not only within the Scouts, but within our communities.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, if you tie this into the articles that talk about the decline of the church, this is one opportunity that some of these young men get into a church when they might not otherwise.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's sad to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. Another top story.
Yeah, another kind of grim one. I think, you know, this will kind of bring my top stories for the year to a close, is Vatican's response to the child abuse cases that have been going on.
Yeah, which follows up from the Boy Scouts in a sense, you know, in terms of abuse.
Right.
And what has been the word from the Vatican on the Pope on this?
So I think initially, from, you know, many of the articles that I read, a lot of people were pretty disappointed with the Pope. They felt like at the onset of these most recent cases, he was not speaking out in the way that they would have liked. But it feels like that has changed in 2019. And the one that I have in front of me, he's quoted as calling for eradicating abuse inside and outside the Catholic Church, and referring to clergy who abuse children as tools of Satan. So he's pretty clear, I think, about how he feels.
That's a very strong statement.
Yeah.
You know, definitely against the teachings of the Church.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it makes you think not only about church polity and how they handle these cases, but also about what's behind it all.
Right.
You know, it's clearly not just a Catholic Church issue.
No.
And so what is going on with all this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing those stories. But as I reflect on what you said, it seems like it was a pretty, how do I say, grim year?
Yeah.
Past year. And what might you say to help people to have some hope for 2020 and beyond?
Yeah. Well, I think we know that bad news sells, right? I mean, so people want to read about these stories of tragedy and hardship and, you know, and it's not the positive stories that always get into the news, but that doesn't mean that they're not happening. When I reflect on this past year at St. James, it's reflections that I know are happening in congregations all over the country and the world, that we are continuing to feed the hungry, to house the homeless. Right now at St. James, we're currently housing the Gettysburg homeless for a number of weeks as part of our Gettysburg Cares program, offering out grocery vouchers and gas vouchers for people who are in need, sitting with people in the midst of tragedy, helping them to make sense of loss. And so, you know, while the church might not be in the global news in positive ways that we would like, that does not mean that God's work is not happening and that the gospel is not reaching people in their moments of need. And so we are called as baptized Christians, as faithful people, to bring that sense of hope into the world, to bring the kingdom of God here on earth for people. And I think we're doing it, you know, so we just got to continue to voice it.
Okay, and that's a good place to end, and a hopeful word.
Right.
Thank you.
Absolutely, thank you.
My guest today on the Seminary Explorers has been Pastor Andrew Geib, who is the Associate Pastor at St. James Lutheran Church here in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.